नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। वरं च मत्कंशन मारवेन्द्र वृणीस्वते हं गुणशीलरन्त्रिता नाहं मखर्वाय सुलभास्थपोभिर् योगेन वायात्समचित्तवर्ति।
Just a few days ago, I was speaking Srimad Bhagavatam class, and this was the verse. And I thought it was relevant, so we will present it to you.
My dear King, I am very captivated by your elevated qualities and excellent behavior. And thus I am very favorably inclined toward you. You may therefore ask from me any benediction you like. One who does not possess elevated qualities and behavior cannot possibly achieve my favor simply by performance of sacrifices, severe austerities, or mystic yoga. But I always remain equipoised in the heart of one who is also equipoised in all circumstances. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Lord Vishnu was very pleased with Maharaj Prithu's good character and behavior, and offered him a benediction. The Lord openly says that performing sacrifices or undergoing the austerities of mystic yoga practice cannot satisfy him. He is pleased only by elevated character and behavior. But these cannot develop unless one becomes a pure devotee of the Lord. Anyone who has developed unalloyed, unflinching devotional service unto the Lord develops his good qualities as spirit soul. The spirit soul, as part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, has all good qualities of the Lord. When the spirit soul is contaminated by the material modes of nature, one is considered good or bad with reference to the material qualities. But when one is transcendental to all material qualities, all the good qualities come out. These qualities of a devotee, 26 in number, are listed as follows. Kind to everyone, does not quarrel with anyone, fixed in truth, equal to everyone, faultless, charitable, mild, clean, simple, benevolent, peaceful, completely attached to Krishna, has no material hankering, meek, steady, self-control, does not eat more than required, sane, respectful, humble, grave, compassionate, friendly, poetic, expert, and silent. The Lord is satisfied by the development of the transcendental qualities of a living entity, and not by artificial performance of sacrifices and mystic yoga. In other words, unless one is fully qualified to become a pure devotee of the Lord, one cannot expect to be liberated from material entanglement.
grateful for this opportunity to be with all of you today. This particular verse from Srimad Bhagavatam illuminates a truth that is the very essence of devotional service. Krishna tells, or let us say, in the Srimad Bhagavatam there is a verse, Atapumbir Dvijastreshtas Varanashrama Vibhagasha Shvanustatasya Dharmasya Samsidir Hari Toshana. Whatever our occupation, whatever our particular social status, ashram may be, our success is based simply on how we please Krishna. Samsidir Hari Toshana. Our chanting of the holy names, our hearing and studying of the holy scriptures, our performing of puja on the altar, our prayers, our seva or our particular duties to our families, to the society at large. The success is Lord Hari pleased? The nature of the false ego is we want to put our own evaluation of what is success. It may be in numbers, in quantity, or even in certain types of quality. But what pleases Krishna, we must understand according to what Krishna tells us. We could do everything right according to our own evaluation, and spiritually could be totally wrong. So here, Krishna is telling what pleases him. When we have good character and good behavior. And even if we, Srila Prabhupada explains, elaborating on the translation, he's not pleased with our sacrifices or our austerities if we do not have good character and behavior. At the time that this story was enacted, the Yuga Dharma was performing of yajna. And Prithu Maharaj was performing many such yajnas. In the age of Kali, yajnai sankirtanapraya yajantihi shamedusha. That the sacrifice for this age is the chanting of the holy names of the Lord. Harinama, 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 eva kevalam kalo nasteva, nasteva, nasteva gatiranyata. But even this sacrifice, our advancement is really according to how we perform it in a way that pleases Krishna. And we have these 10 offenses to the holy names, because by understanding them carefully, by understanding what is the culture of Vaishnavism, and trying to live by that culture, when we chant, we please Krishna. And we were speaking yesterday from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Sri Chaitanya Bhagavat, about the example of how Lord Chaitanya and his associates, who actually established this Yuga Dharma, this chanting of the holy names in a practical way, in this world, what was their behavior? What was their characteristics?
They were free from envy. They were free from duplicity. The context of this story is fascinating. Prithu Maharaj was a great king, the son of Vena. And for the benefit of the whole world, he wanted to please Lord Vishnu or Krishna. So he was performing these yajnas. It was meant to bring benedictions, not just to him, but to everyone. Because whatever we do, it influences the world. So as a king, he saw every one of his citizens in every species of life as his own children. He saw every living being in his, as his children, in the sense that he was supposed, a leader is representing Krishna, who is the supreme father, mother of all living beings. He saw everyone as the children of Krishna. And by taking a leader position, we're not the controllers or the proprietors of anything. Shesha Prabhu this morning gave such a brilliant, insightful, realized class. Thank you, Shesha Prabhu. About this concept of being a servant of the servant of the servant. That actual leadership is to recognize that everything is Krishna's property, Sarva Loka Maheshwara. And everyone is a personal, intimate, loving child of Krishna. Some may be conscious of it, and some may be unconscious of it. But the truth is the same. Aham Bija Pradapita. Krishna is the father, mother of everyone. So whether we're a mother, or a father, or a king, or a shiksha guru, or a diksha guru, or a person, in any time we have anyone under our care or our charge, on any level, we are meant to be caretakers of Krishna's property. It's not ours. It's not that we just act according to our whims. In this material world, the more we gain, the more we think we're independent. But the more we think we're independent, the more we're actually slaves of the only actual thing to be independent of. That's our own false egos. Even if you're chained, Kamsa was completely a prisoner of his false ego. Vasudeva and Devaki, they were in chains in an underground prison, but they were liberated because they had no false ego. Krishna appeared to them and blessed them. He appeared to Kamsa in another way. So real freedom is freedom from this misconception. Bhoktaram jagatapasam sarvaloka maheshwaram suhridam sarvabhutanam gyatva mam shantim richchati. Real peace is not ever going to come by our material circumstances, whatever they may be. Real peace is an unconditional state of consciousness. Whether we're in the winter or the summer, whether we're on our deathbed or whether we are at the prime of our youth, it's when we accept that Krishna is the proprietor of everything. He's the supreme controller and he's our real friend. And to see everything in life in according to that principle. We are the servants of the servants of the servants. So this Prithu Maharaj was performing this sacrifice for everyone's welfare. And he decided to perform 100.
Now, these particular yajñas that he were performing, they were extremely difficult. To perform one was practically a lifetime work in those days. And he decided to do 100. And he was actually doing it. And every time the Lord was appearing to receive what he was offering. Now Indra, who's a Vaishnav, great king, he had already performed 100. And he had the world record. Actually, it was a universal record. He had the universe. Like we have Miss Universe and Mr. Universe, but what does that mean here in this? But this is actual. He had a universal record. 100 yagyas he performed. And each one, Vishnu came and accepted his offerings. So Prithu Maharaj did 99, and he was about to do 100, and he would have 100% been success. Indra was attached to his position. It's a million times more prestigious than winning the World Cup. No offense. But this is really a record. This is a record that stands for millenniums. And here he was about to lose it. Someone was going to become his equal. And when you become your equal, that means you're on the verge of even exceeding. He became fearful and envious. And he lost his intelligence due to this envy. And he disguised himself in so many ways to try to stop the yajna. And he did it. Again and again and again he was trying. Each time he got caught. And he was let go. And then he tried again. And he was caught. And he let go. And he tried again. And finally, it was Prithu Maharaja's son who kept catching him. And the great rishis and sages, Atri Muni, was saying, Indra, kill that man. He's just an envious fool. He's creating so much, because when a leader acts in an irreligious way in the name of religion, it creates irreligion. What Indra was doing is he was posing in the name of being a saintly person, a religious person, and he was doing things for his own egoistic purposes. What leaders do, common people follow. Because he was acting out of envy in the name of God, in the name of religion, he was actually polluting the world and leading people to think that this is the standard. And we see the effects it has today. In the name of God, in the name of religion, people act with arrogance. People act with envy. And common people follow. That's the standard. To be a spiritual person means to be competitive with arrogance and envy. So Prithu Maharaj saw what he was doing. He was actually misleading people and spoiling the name of true spirituality. So Prithu Maharaj, for the protection of the world, picked up his bow and arrow to punish Indra. And at that time, the Brahmins, they said, don't do that. It's not good. We'll do it our way. We'll chant a mantra, and Indra's going to be forced to fall into the fire and burn. Pretty intense. So they were about to chant their mantra, the last oblation after this whole long ritual. They were going to
Indra was going to come like that. And Brahma, Lord Brahma appeared.
And he spoke. And he explained to Prithu Maharaj that what will please the Lord and what will please me is you don't have to do 100 yajñas. Just your character, your qualities, your behavior enough is pleasing to us. Just leave it at that. In this regard, I'd like to read a little passage. One who is advanced and intelligent and eager to perform welfare activities for others is considered best among human beings. An advanced human being is never malicious to others. Those with advanced intelligence are always conscious that this material body is different from the soul. A particular purport by Srila Prabhupada that was so beautiful. I wanted to read it, but I cannot find it. So what happens is, in Prithu Maharaj decides, I will not win the world record. For the sake of a higher purpose of peace and cooperation, I will renounce that. And he began to start giving gifts to all the Brahmins and everyone, which means he was finished. At that time, Lord Vishnu personally came. And he spoke this verse that we're reading today. He says, I am captivated by you because of your good behavior, because of your character. Now in the world today, Indra has the world record for yajñas. But how many of us feel a greater sense of glorification to Indra or to Prithu Maharaj? Because Prithu Maharaj put a higher principle than his own purpose. And Lord Vishnu was glorifying Prithu Maharaj. And when Indra saw how the Lord was glorifying Prithu Maharaj for this renunciation, Indra went to fall at Prithu Maharaj's feet and beg forgiveness. And Prithu Maharaj was so humble, he wouldn't let Indra fall at his feet. He picked him up and embraced him. And here Srila Prabhupada said Indra decided to fall down at the lotus feet of King Prithu. But the king was so magnanimous, a Vaishnav, that he did not want Maharaj Indra to fall down at his feet. Instead, Prithu Maharaj immediately picked him up
and embraced him, and both of them forgot all the past incidences. Is everyone listening? This is important. O King, it's so important I'm going to put my spectacles. Both King Indra and Maharaj Prithu were envious and angry with each other. But since both of them were Vaishnavas, or servants of Lord Vishnu, it was their duty to adjust the cause of their envy. This is also a first-class example of cooperative behavior between Vaishnavas. In the present days, however, because people are not Vaishnavas, they fight perpetually among one another and are vanquished without finishing the mission of human life. There is a great need to propagate the Krishna consciousness movement in the world so that even though people sometimes become angry and malicious toward one another, because of their being Krishna consciousness, such rivalry, competition, and envy can be adjusted without difficulty. So there is Srila Prabhupada's definition of what a Vaishnava is. One who is willing to make those adjustments for a higher cause. Prithu Maharaj by putting this higher cause of pleasing Krishna in the center of his life and his activities is glorified throughout times in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And Indra, who maintains his universal record, is forever an example of what not to do. Hare Krishna. Today is the disappearance day of Sanatan Goswami. It is also Guru Purnima, the day when Srila Vyasadeva is worshipped. When we speak of the behavior of Vaishnavas, Sanatan Goswami being our Sambandha Guru, gives us in the example of his life what we should strive for. Mahajano yena katasa bandha. Lord Chaitanya told us that the path of perfection is to follow in the footsteps of great souls. Let us very briefly look into the life of Sanatana Goswami. What kind of Vaishnav he was. What was his example? When he was the prime minister under the king of Bengal, he was fabulously wealthy. His name was Sakar Malik. He was given a special title. And his brother Rupa Goswami was Dabir Khas. They were like billionaires. They were profound scholars of all different languages and different scriptures. They had fabulous control. They were beautiful. Everything a person could have, they had it and more. Still, they built a beautiful assembly house to discuss scriptures. And they invited all different kinds of people from all different places to come. Srinivasacharya's father, he was telling Srinivasacharya that years before he went to that place in Ramkeli, he said there were hundreds and hundreds of people gathering. And Rupa and Sanatana Goswami, they were sitting on an elevated seat among the great scholars. He said, they look like Indras. They were effulgent. They were beautiful. They were so powerful and so, they were more learned than everybody else. But anyone who came in that door, they came off their seat to personally greet them and serve them. This quality, when a person has so much and they could still be humble and eager to serve. In this particular chapter that we've read from Srimad Bhagavatam, there's a beautiful verse that describes a true devotee is one who is equal to everyone. Whether that person is superior to us by material standards or qualifications, whether they're equal to us or whether they're inferior to us. Those are details. A devotee is eager to humble themselves to serve everyone according to the need for each particular situation and person. Chaitanya Das, the father of Srinivasacharya, is saying that this so much conquered his heart. People with such political power, so much money, so much knowledge, so much physical beauty. Amanina manadena. And they're offering such deep, heartfelt respect to everyone. They're serving everyone. And eventually, Lord Chaitanya came there. And we read in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in the middle of the night, Rupan Sanatan and their brother Anupam, they disguised themselves and went to where Lord Chaitanya was sitting. First they got the permission of Lord Nityananda Prabhu and Haridas Thakur. They brought them in to see Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They prostrated themselves. Lord Chaitanya had to pick them up. They were crying, revealing their hearts, talking about how they were feeling themselves to be the most fallen. His followers, their scholarship and knowledge, they were incomparable. On every level, they were exalted. And they actually loved Krishna. But they considered themselves to be the most fallen. And Lord, they said, Jagai and Madhai, they may have done some sinful activities, but at least they didn't serve atrocious people like we are doing. So we are more fallen than Jagai and Madhai. They were not seeing how they could put themselves above others. They were looking for any opportunity to show how they were below others. How many of us are like that? There's such a deep-seated egoistic propensity in so many of us that we have to prove ourselves to be superior to others. It's born of arrogance. It's born of envy. When we see those tendencies, we should not serve them as our masters. We should fight against them because they are our enemies. The number one enemy is our own ahankar, our own false ego. Lord Chaitanya started to cry.
He said, you are breaking my heart with your humility. Stop speaking like this.
And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu put his feet on their head and gave them the names Rupa and Sanatana Goswami and told them to go to Vrindavan. It's a wonderful story. But Sanatana Goswami, he had so many responsibilities, he didn't want to just leave without performing them. So he was kind of gradually phasing himself out. He became so deeply immersed in studying the Srimad Bhagavatam with other devotees that the king was so angry with him, he put Sanatana Goswami in prison. Here he was, a billionaire, the prime minister, now just for the service of the Lord, he was willing to become a prisoner. And if you go to Ramkeli, you'll see Sanatana Goswami's prison cell is still there. It's pretty simple. It's kind of underground. And he escaped. And now he's a fugitive. By his own free will. Not because he was corrupt, but because he loved Krishna. He wanted to serve the will of the Lord. And eventually he came to Vrindavan. And how did he live in Vrindavan? We'll get to that in a minute. But it's described that Lord Chaitanya called him to come to Puri. So from Vrindavan, Sanatana Goswami walked to Jagannath Puri. It's about 1,000 kilometers. And in order to walk there, you had to go through jungles. And he was alone. When he went through the Jharikhanda jungle, he was in ecstasy because he knew Lord Chaitanya came through this jungle. Lord Chaitanya made the tigers and the deers and everyone embrace each other and kiss each other and dance together as they chanted the holy names. That was the effect of Lord Chaitanya's compassion. And he was remembering all those beautiful events. But somehow he drank some water and he got a terrible skin disease. His entire body was blistering. So much that there was these oozing substances of blood and pus coming out. His whole body. And it itched unbearably. It was painful, it was itching. And the moistures that were coming out of him smelled terrible. And it just didn't go away. It was getting worse and worse. And Sanatana Goswami was thinking, this body of mine is useless for service. He decided, I'll give up my body. During the Rath Yatra, when I get to Puri, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is present with all his devotees and they're all chanting the holy names and Jagannath is looking down, I will put my body under the wheel of the chariot. He had already decided that. He came to Puri and went to the kutir, or the little residence of Haridas Thakur. And he asked Haridas, where is Lord Chaitanya? And right at that moment, Lord Chaitanya arrived. And Sanatana Goswami offered his dandavat, his prostrated obeisances.
And Haridas said to Lord Chaitanya, here is Sanatan Goswami offering his obeisances. And Lord Chaitanya went to pick him up, and Sanatan Goswami tried to jump away. He said, no, don't touch me. I have all these blood and pus all over my body. It's an infectious disease. Do not touch me. Lord Chaitanya, he had very long arms. They were beautiful, like golden pillars. And he caught Sanatan and pulled him in and embraced him. And as he embraced him, pus and infectious blood smeared on the beautiful golden body of Lord Chaitanya. Sanatan Goswami was really disturbed. What have I done? And this only reconfirmed his commitment to go under the wheel of the chariot. But he didn't say anything to anyone. But Lord Chaitanya's Paramatma, he knows everyone's heart. This is what it means to be Krishna conscious. Being Krishna conscious has a lot of aspects to it. But one is to be conscious that Krishna's in our heart and he hears everything we say and he sees everything we do. And he knows everything we think. But that's so good. Because he's our loving mother and father. He really cares about us. He only wants the best for us. But we can't cheat Krishna. He knows our motives. Srila Prabhupada writes, Krishna does not accept the things we offer. He accepts the intention, the purpose in which it is offered. That is bhakti. We should certainly, whatever intentions we do, should be activated by our words and our activities. But those intentions are the core of how Krishna is going to be pleased or not pleased. So out of nowhere, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu shocked Sanatan Goswami. He said, Sanatan, you are a thief. Sanatan. He said, you want to destroy another person's property. He said, you have already surrendered to me. That means your body is my property and you want to destroy my property by putting your body under the wheel of Jagannath's chariot? This is a criminal activity. I have so many things I want to do through your body. Give up this nonsense. In other words, this whole concept of suicide, we have no right to. Because it's not pleasing to Krishna. It's his property. He wants us to utilize our mind, our body, our words according to his will. So Sanatana Goswami gave up that idea. Now, Lord Chaitanya is the controller of all controllers. Why didn't he heal him from his disease? Months and months, about 8 months went by and Sanatana Goswami's disease was still as intense as ever. Day and night. And every day, Lord Chaitanya would come to be with Sanatana Goswami and Haridas Thakur for several hours. And every day with his long golden arms, he would embrace Sanatana Goswami and all that pus and blood went on Lord Chaitanya's body. One day, Lord Chaitanya invited Sanatana Goswami to meet him at the Yamala Tota Garden, which is near the Tota Gopinath Temple. Now, to get there, it was
he asked him to come at noontime, and it was the summer. Now, for those of you who have been to Jagannath Puri in the summer, if you walk on the sand, it's as hot as blazing fire. It's unbearable to walk barefoot. He could have gone another way, in a nice, cool way. But he would have had to gone close to Jagannath's temple. So he chose to go by the sand, and his feet were blistered. When he finally came to where Lord Chaitanya was, Lord Chaitanya had already taken prasad and was taking rest, and Sanatana Goswami waited. And when Lord Chaitanya came out, he saw the blisters on Sanatana's feet. He said, "What happened to you?" Sanatana Goswami didn't say anything. He said, "Which way did you come? Why did you go by the sand? It's like fire. Why didn't you go the other way?" Sanatana Goswami didn't say anything, except that he was happy. But in his mind, he was thinking, if I would have gone the other way, one of the pujaris or the priests of Jagannath may have touched me. And if they touched me, they would have been contaminated. And then they would have gone in and served Lord Jagannath in a contaminated state. This was how he would rather go through such excruciating suffering than cause someone else to make an offense. But because he was in that state of consciousness, such compassion, such respect for others, we cannot imitate. But that's the standard we should strive for. That's the values we should understand are what we should be directing ourselves to. Unless we really hear about how the great souls live and the values that they live by, then we will inevitably be distracted by so many petty, useless little things that we think are so important, based on our ego and our envy. He would rather suffer than have someone else make an offense. But actually, he said, because he was so eager to see Lord Chaitanya, he hardly felt the pain. Lord Chaitanya gave him prasad. And eventually, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu embraced him, and he was completely healed. At that time, Haridas Thakur exclaimed, "You gave him that disease. And you had him practically 8 months suffering that disease, and now you embraced him and you healed him. This is all your pastimes." Because the Lord wanted to teach the world through his devotee. Lord Chaitanya sent Sanatana Goswami back to Vrindavan. And while he lived there, he was so kind to everyone. As far as the Brijabasis, he would travel and do madhukari. That means he would beg for some rotis. He would go village to village. He was the friend of everyone. He would ask them, "How is your cows? How is your bulls? How are the calves? How is your wife? How is your husband? How is your children? Did you get good rains this year? What crops are you growing?" He would solve their problems. They trusted him so much. They honored his blessings for everything. "Do you think our daughter should marry this person? Do you think I should?" He would say, "Yes, yes, very." How is your children's education? He was interested in their lives. They all felt so valued, so important. because they felt that he genuinely cared about them and loved them, everyone. Whether they were simple farmers, whether they were mothers or fathers, children, whatever their caste, he genuinely was compassionate. He was equal to all. And because of that, whenever he would come to a village, the entire village would be there to welcome him. And they would just all be trying to give him gifts, and he was just wanted to give of himself. And when he would spend the day, he'd spend the night, and the next morning when he would leave, the entire village would be seeing him off, and everyone would be crying because he was leaving. In this way, he was really the friend to everyone, because everyone felt he really cared. And in this way, they all accepted whatever he said. He became the guru of practically the entire Brajbhumi. The standards that he set is what everyone strive to live by. He would perform Govardhan Parikrama every day. He would chant the holy names with such attention. For some time he was living at Chakaleshwar Mahadev, which is an ancient temple of Lord Shiva near the Manasi Ganga at Govardhan Hill. And mosquitoes were attacking him. At that time, he was writing so many books like the Brihad Bhagavatamrita. And he would write at night. He would just like burn leaves to keep some light on, and dried leaves. And he'd write. But it was very difficult for him to write and do his sadhana with all these mosquitoes buzzing and buzzing and biting and buzzing and biting. So he decided, I'll go to another place where I could serve better. But Lord Shiva, who was just his neighbor, was so attached to Sanatan Goswami. Lord Shiva was in his deity form. He disguised himself as a Brahmin and came to Sanatan Goswami. He saw Sanatan Goswami was preparing to go. He said, "Where are you going?" He said, "I'm leaving." He said, "Just stay one more night. I think no more mosquitoes will come." So then Lord Shiva went to the demigod in charge of mosquitoes. He said, "Don't let any of your people go to Sanatan Goswami." And not a single mosquito ever came back. It's not like he got some mosquito coil. One of those electrical things that go bzzz. he was so respectful to the mosquitoes, he would rather leave than cause them a problem. So that was to the extent even Lord Shiva, Vaishnavanam Yata Shambhu, who's this personification of compassion, how much he was attached. Everyone loved Sanatan Goswami. Even when he was so old, he was so strong in his regulative principles, he still did the whole parikrama of Govardhan, and he did the wide parikrama, going to Chandasrovar and all of these distant places. And people were trying to convince him, "You're too old for this." He said, no, I must do it." So Krishna appeared and put a footprint on a stone of Govardhan Hill and told him, "Just do parikrama of this 8 times. And then you get the credit of doing the whole Govardhan parikrama." And when he passed away from the world, on this day, today, his disappearance day, he was just sitting chanting the holy names, totally absorbed in the highest samadhi of prem bhakti, meditating on Radha Krishna, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. When he passed from the world, everybody from the whole Braj Bhumi came to offer the tears of their love to Sanatana Goswami. All the villages, hundreds of villagers, everyone came. Because he was the best friend of every villager of every village. He was their friend. He was their father. He was their mother. He was their servant. He was their guru. He was their everything. And on that day, in honor of him, all the Brijabasis performed the Govardhan Parikrama. And to this day, the biggest day of the year for Parikrama of Govardhan Hill is Guru Purnima. All Brijabasis, so many hundreds and thousands of Brijabasis from everywhere come to do it. And once one of my friends asked one of the Brijabasis, why are so many Brijabasis coming today to do the Parikrama? More than Govardhan Puja or any other day. And they said, because we are honoring our Guru Sanatana Goswami on his disappearance day. This is the effect he had. Such compassion. There is that famous story of the values that he taught us. One man was worshiping Lord Shiva because he wanted to get a touchstone. A touchstone is a particular type of mystical substance, a stone. And when you touch it to iron with a mantra, it transforms the iron into pure solid gold. Now there's a lot of iron around. Iron doesn't cost much. So he wanted a touchstone. So he performed tapasya to Lord Shiva for years and years. And he pleased Lord Shiva, Ashutosh. And Shiva said, well, I know where there is a touchstone. Go to the Dasaswamedha Teal in Vrindavan near the Yamuna River. Sanatana Goswami has a touchstone. Ask him. He'll give it to you. So he went to Vrindavan. He went to the bank of the Yamuna. He climbed the little hill. There was Sanatana Goswami. He had nothing. He was living under a tree. He was just wearing a kopan. He was begging for food from the Brijabasis. They would give him some wheat. He would put a little Yamuna water in the wheat. He would make a fire. He'd make a ball out of the wheat and put it in the fire direct, kind of burn it, and then offer it and eat it. That was it. So this person saw he's wearing a kopan. He's living under a tree. He's eating this bhati. He's the one with the touchstone. I want the touchstone so I could be the richest man on earth. He said, do you have a touchstone? Sanatana Goswami said, I think I do, actually. He said, well, Lord Shiva sent me. He told me you would give it to me. I want it. He said, really, you want it? Okay, you can have it. Well, where is it? He said, I think it's over there. Where? He said, it's over there. He looked. There was a pile of rubbish. Now, you know what piles of rubbish are like in India. He said, it's somewhere in that pile. The man was shocked. He started going through the rubbish, and he found the touchstone. Sanatana Goswami said, take it. So he took it, and it worked. He was touching iron, and it was becoming gold. But you know how material things are. Nothing can satisfy you.
Krishna tells in Gita that material desires, kama, it burns like fire. The more you feed it, the hotter the fire blazes. The more money you have, the more money you need, if you're greedy. Greed can never be satisfied. The more lusty you are, the more you try to satisfy your lust, the more the lust blazes. Envy. The more we serve our envy to try to pacify ourselves from that, it just causes the fire of envy to burn more. Tapasya means to not give in to these tendencies. Param drishtvani vartate. To actually engage our mind and senses in those activities of devotional service in which we actually transcend these lower nature. But Maya is so powerful. Even in the name of God and religion and Krishna consciousness, Maya will try to convince us that this is what we need. So he was thinking, I'm getting so much, but if Sanatana Goswami was keeping this touchstone in a rubbish pile, that means he has something even better than this. I have to have that. This is not good enough anymore. So he went to Sanatana Goswami. Said, you must have something better. I want what you have. He said, Sanatana Goswami said, I do have something better. I have something millions of times better than the touchstone. He said, I want it. He said, I'll give it to you, but you have to throw the touchstone in the Yamuna River. This is a very serious matter. He spent years and years yearning and performing tapasya and fasting and doing pujas to get that touchstone. And now Sanatana Goswami says, throw it in the river. That means gone forever. But understand, this was the power of Sanatana Goswami's compassion. His character, his behavior caused this person to have so much faith in him that he was willing to give up the touchstone knowing that Sanatana Goswami would give him something better. And he took that touchstone and threw it. To the bottom of the river. Gone forever. Now he had nothing. But the one thing he had is faith that Sanatana Goswami was his well-wisher. Sanatana Goswami said, now I will give you the best thing. I will give you a mantra that will give you the inner wealth of prema bhakti, ecstatic love for Krishna. Chant this holy name. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. Gave him the Maha Mantra, the names of Radha Krishna. And the man did not feel cheated. The man was happy. He believed so deeply that this Maha Mantra would give him the greatest wealth of ecstatic love for Krishna. Not the vulnerable, temporary wealth of this world, which can never satisfy. But this is the power of satsang, associating with great souls. When Srila Prabhupada came to America, as Shesha Prabhu was telling us this morning, here were people taking drugs was so much their life, eating meat. They were eating it since the day they were born, practically.
having all sorts of sexual relationships was, it was not only felt nice to them, but it was the highest fashion. That's what made you a hero, is you could do all these things. Yes, when you go in those days in the movies, I don't know what they're like since the 60s because I haven't seen them so much, but you know, there was like people who were powerful and having aggressive sex life, they were like heroes.
And here's Prabhupada, 26 Second Avenue, he had no money. His body was not that healthy. He was sitting in a little store. He was in the Bowery and then a little storefront, didn't have the next month's rent.
And it's not that the people just understood the philosophy, the Siddhanta, immediately.
As Shesha Prabhu was explaining, Prabhupada's behavior, his character, his compassion was so deep that they had faith in him. It was the same as this man with Sanatan Goswami. They were willing, Prabhupada said, I will give you the greatest wealth. Here they are, Manhattan Island. More millionaires than there are in anywhere in the world in those days. Wall Street, Madison Avenue. And here's little Prabhupada saying, I'll give you the greatest wealth. And they had faith. Just give up illicit sex, intoxication, gambling, meat eating, and chant this mantra. That's how our movement started. Faith in a great person. A person who had no ulterior motives. A person who simply loved Krishna. And love for Krishna means to love, to actually feel genuine concern, compassion for all beings who are part of Krishna. That's what Vaishnavism is. Sanatan Goswami is our Sambandha Guru. He's teaching us how to actually develop a relationship, reestablish our relationship with Krishna. Now, the six Goswamis, headed by Rupa and Sanatan, they gave us an abundance of literature. In their literature, they described the basic principles of pure bhakti all the way through every level to the highest dimension of spiritual revelation. They're revealing to us the intimate loving relationships of Radha, Damodar, the gopis, the gopas in the spiritual world. Now, actually, anyone with some academic capacity could learn this, can speak this, can memorize it. Gita Govinda, I like to tell this story. Gita Govinda is a book that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu relished as the highest realm of the revelation of Radha and Krishna's leelas in this world, one of the highest. But just Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he said, if unless you're really on that level of prema bhakti, better not to read it. It's very elevated. I was once giving a lecture, and along with me was a professor, and he got his PhD on the Gita Govinda. He had it totally memorized, the entirety of it. Sanskrit, he understood every word of the Sanskrit. He could speak eloquently on it. He knew all the innuendos of different levels of rasa. He was an incredible person. He was getting paid for it, too.
But then after our talk, he said, why do you worship Krishna? He said, I know Krishna. I have my PhD. I'm an authority of Gita Govinda. I know. You ask him about all the different levels of ecstatic love of God. He knows it. He could speak it. But he said, but, you know, when Krishna, you know, is going in the bushes with gopis, why do you want to worship a god like that? He had no faith. I told him, dear Professor G, you should study the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita. And understand who you are as a spirit soul and who is Krishna. The Srimad Bhagavatam begins with the first canto, first verse. If you jump to the 10th canto, you're not really going to understand who this Krishna is. He's stealing butter. He's dancing with gopis. But we learn in the preliminary chapters, Bhagavad Gita, he's manifested the universal form. I quoted Srila Prabhupada. I said, if you want to think Krishna like that, if you want to be like Krishna and dance with gopis, which he did when he was 8 years old, first, lift Govardhan Hill with the little finger of your left hand for 7 days when you're 7 years old. So, so he didn't know what to say. But he did say something. He turned to his wife who was with him and he said, we're late for breakfast, we should go. But if we want to understand the literatures of the Goswamis, we have to follow in the footsteps of the six Goswamis. And we're reading about Sanatana Goswami. What was his character? What was his behavior? Our Prayojana Guru is Raghunath Das Goswami. He's teaching us how to love like the gopis love. But he's offering 2,000 obeisances to devotees every day. He was so humble. When he was in Puri and when he was in Vrindavan, there are so many instances of his incredible humility, his incredible respect for all beings. When we really feel like Rupa and Sanatan, when they are saying that Jagai and Madhai is better than me, what to speak of I'm better than you, then we're actually following in the footsteps. And Srila Prabhupada is writing in this beautiful purport that I read, that even if there is some flashes of envy or competition between us on that level, if we're actually devotees, real Vaishnavas, according to Prabhupada's definition, we'll adjust it. Why? Because this type of inter-devotee conflict is so displeasing to Krishna. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said it was like a fire that burns everything. So this principle is very much manifested by great personalities like Srila Sanatan Goswami. And when we really strive, tapasya means to live by this character and behavior. By putting Krishna's
satisfaction in the center.
Srila Prabhupada said, show your love for me by how you cooperate. It's not just the mode of goodness, because we're doing it for that higher purpose. And at the same time, we're really trying to take shelter of the holy names of Krishna. We're really trying to dive deep in satsang, to discuss the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Bhagavad Gita, the Chaitanya Charitamrita. We're trying to become immersed in these pastimes, immersed in the holy names, in japa, in kirtan.
But however immersed we are, if we don't have this good character and good behavior, if we're not striving in that way, if we're not putting Krishna in the center, it's a very, very slow process.
In fact, Bhakti Krishna said, Lord Chaitanya, in Sri Chaitanya Bhagavat, he said, if you're chanting Krishna's name and criticizing devotees, Krishna will be so displeased, through his name he will punish you. That's how powerful this path of bhakti is. Lord Chaitanya said, do two things, and I promise you I will take you back to Godhead. Always chant the holy names and do not criticize others. Not me speaking. It's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu speaking. He puts such emphasis like this.
So spreading Krishna consciousness in the West, in the East, in the North, in the South, in inner space and outer space, Kaladesha Patra, time, place, circumstance, we adjust things. It's important. But this siddhantic character of a Vaishnava is what's all important. If we don't catch that, however good our organization or our management or even our apparent sadhana, or our however expert we are at trying to apply things according to time, place, circumstance, and everything else. But to actually spread Krishna consciousness, we have to get the basics very, very solid within ourselves, as individually and as a society. The details, Srila Prabhupada, may be adjusted, but the core philosophy and the core culture of Vaishnavism, which is what the philosophy is meant to create, is something, if we really do that right, then Krishna will empower us according to time, place, and circumstance with something beautiful. Rukmini Devi, she may be here somewhere, she gave me a book once, which was written by, I believe it was a sociologist, about how Christianity spread and how new movements spread. And this person did research about how early Christianity spread, but then he went to different new movements who were kind of in new places, like the Hare Krishna movement and others like that. And when they asked, why did you come to this movement? Almost everybody immediately would say, because of the philosophy. But then when the person really started interviewing deeper, They actually came to the movement before they really even understood the philosophy. The reason why people really open their hearts is because I'd rather be with these people than anyone else. When you really, if the philosophy makes sense, but you really don't like being with the people, you're probably not going to believe the philosophy so much. It's not going to go so deep. But if you really see exemplary people, then it's easy to actually have faith in the philosophy. If it's transformed them like this, it can transform me too. So to create communities, and that's what Srila Prabhupada was. So Prabhupada did things, time, place, and circumstance, but he created communities where people felt valued. And he gave us this understanding of Vaishnavism, where we rise above competitive arrogance and envy for the higher principle of actually being each other's well-wishers. Certainly we have to sustain and retain our Siddhanta, but among Vaishnavas, it's done with dignity, with compassion, with integrity. Sometimes Srila Prabhupada would be very strong on a certain point, but he was very compassionate with a person who was having difficulty. And because he was like that, maintaining the standard, but giving a person the kindness and love by which they could come to that standard, people had faith. People understood, even as fallen as I am, I could make it because I have these guides, because I have this society, this community. And it are these principles that are hallmark in Vaishnava culture. And then, yes, according to time, place, circumstances, we can adjust to somehow or other, make ourselves accessible to people. But once become a little accessible, what do we bring them to? The concept of Varnashram Dharma is a concept by which all people could gradually be elevated by the association of devotees to that highest realm of Goloka Vrindavan and pure devotional service. That is why Srila Prabhupada gave so much special interest to Gita Nagari. So now I'll begin my talk for today. Prabhupada first came here in 1976, and he walked around and everything, and he saw the cows, and he was this concept of simple living, high thinking, of putting Krishna in the center. He also came four times to New Vrindavan. I was there three of the four times when he came. But I wasn't allowed to get too close to him because I was just a little cowherd person and a pujari. But still, I would get to sit in a class like all of you and listen. But you don't have to be an intimate physical associate. The real thing is to open our hearts to really understand what pleases Srila Prabhupada and to live by that. And that's where the real intimacy of the heart is. And that is accessible to everyone. It's just a matter of our sincerity.
Srila Prabhupada wanted to establish what he called Varnashram Dharma in these farm communities, where practically everyone who has some sincerity for Krishna consciousness could either rapidly or gradually be uplifted. Srila Prabhupada told a story, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, when he sent some people to the West, and he thought that these people will only eat meat. So then you offer the meat to Krishna. That's quite extreme. Prabhupada never actually did that to us. But that's to the degree we try to make Krishna consciousness accessible to people. That doesn't mean we encourage it. It means we have to somehow either make that connection and give people that elevation by the association of devotees. Srila Prabhupada said about cow protection that the spiritual barometer that determines how elevated a society is how happy the cows are. Hare Krishna. Now, when I heard this on a tape, because I lived at New Vrindavan at the time, and I was taking care of cows. And I was way up in the mountain. It was a 3 mile up a muddy road to get to the top of it. And I was doing the puja for the deities, Radha Vrindavanath. They were about this big. And I was taking care of, usually 4 or 5 cows were up there. And I would herd them and make sure they didn't eat too many crab apples because they would get sick. So I would somehow get them away from, but they really like crab apples. I get them to eat nice grasses and then milk them. It was so nice. But we would get one. I was up there usually alone. Sometimes a cook would be up there. But they would, from down below where the main community was, they would send me every week one cassette tape of Prabhupada's lectures. But then before they'd give me one, I'd have to surrender the one I had from the last week. So all through all the aartis and offering and dressing the deities and everything, I would listen to this one tape all day for the whole week of one lecture. Then I'd get another. So I really got to know those tapes nicely. And this one, he said, the barometer of the spiritual level of any society is how happy the cows are. And I was really happy. So I was really trying to make the cows happy. And I found out many nice little secrets of how to make cows happy. One thing is, there's bulls. Cows mean bulls too. Cows and bulls. So that's another subject. But I would. Cows and bulls are happy when they feel loved. And love is expressed by care. It's not so much different than humans. It's the same thing. If a wealthy mother and father give their little girl beautiful clothes and beautiful jewelry and wonderful toys, but they don't give them love, they don't give them attention, things cannot bring happiness to the heart. The little girl looks beautiful, but lives in misery. Ultimately, everyone wants to feel loved and cared for. And unless people are really evil,
If you love and care for people, you bring the best out in them. And that's what Prabhupada did. He brought the best out of everyone. He brought Krishna consciousness out of everyone. So cows, by protecting them and not killing them, that's one aspect. That's like the basics. Because Prabhupada said a cow can sense if they're going to be killed later in their life. Therefore, they're never happy. But if you vow to protect them from the rest of their lives, real protection is not just to not kill them, it's to make them happy. We have this eco-village now in Mumbai. And we have about, I think, 70 cows, bulls. And we made a real nice goshala for them. And there's specific devotees who take care of the cows. It's just a few. I think at our eco-village there's about 60 brahmacharis. And there's about 30 or 40 families. And there's an orphanage and a gurukul with about 50 kids. So there's a lot of people there. And there's just like 4 or 5 people taking care of the cows. When I lived in Vrindavan, long ago, I don't know how much this is relevant, but I really liked hearing it. One Brijavasi told me, in the olden days, whether you're a shopkeeper or whether you're a pujari, to officially be accepted as a Brijabasi, you must spend 1 year of your life taking care of cows. So I really like that. Because I spent 8 years taking care of cows. So... Yeah, we all have our little egos, but so I was thinking that cow protection, which was one of the hallmarks of Prabhupada's teachings, if you read his books, his letters, his lectures, cow protection was not a detail. It was a very important part of our movement. It's an activity, it's a state of consciousness. But it shouldn't just be theoretical. It shouldn't just be academic that we go and we argue with people about cow protection. But do we really know any cows? For that concept of cow protection to really be of the heart, it helps to know cows. And cows like to know people. So last year I made a policy. The cows were really nicely protected and cared for. But I was thinking the cows should actually know everybody here, and everybody here should know the cows. So we suggested a policy. Wasn't like a mandate, it was a suggested policy that every single person in the entire community should spend minimum 3 hours a week personally serving the cows. So everybody was excited about it. So now you have these 50 little kids, they all go and they're brushing the cows and feeding the cows and herding the cows and just being friends with the cows. And you have all of these 30, 40 families, whatever they are, they're all coming with their children and giving their 3 hours a week at all the brahmacharis. You know, we have a school for scriptural study there, where most of these brahmacharis who are there are college graduates from big universities, and they're actually there to do intensive study of our Vaishnava scriptures.
and they all go out for at least 3 hours a week, and they're brushing cows and washing cows, feeding cows. Some of them are milking cows. Some of them, because the cows, they pass dung, and so that the cows don't lay in their own dung, they scoop up the dung and put it into this thing that makes... Actually, all of our cooking is done with gas. Our gas burners are made by cow dung. We have this system where we put all the dung in these gabber gas units. And it just goes right into the stoves, and you just turn it on like any electric, gas stove, and the flame comes, and it's all, we don't have to buy any gas. It's all cow dung. And whatever solid materials are there, it's incredibly nutritious fertilizer for the fields. Very concentrated. So I was told that everyone was real excited about it. And then a few months later, I came to visit the eco village. And I went to the Goshala. And as soon as, I never saw anything like this. As soon as I walked in, all these cows ran up to me and made a circle around me. And they were all like putting their, like rub my neck. They were licking me. And I was thinking, just see, you know, if you give love, you receive love. They're actually happy. So Srila Prabhupada wanted us to establish this idea of, and if you love the cows, because Krishna loved cows, but Krishna also, in Krishna book, you'll see he had goats and he had buffaloes. Lord Chaitanya, he loved everyone, as Krishna did. When we understand this concept, Vidya Vinaya Sampani Brahmani Gavi Hastini Suni Chaiva Swapake Cha Pandita Samadarsha, that Krishna is in everyone's heart, to see everyone with equal vision of compassion. That's bhakti, according to the Gita. That's real knowledge. And through cow protection, we learn to see other, we learn to feel compassion toward all living beings. So we have, we got some donkeys. Because nobody likes donkeys. Usually, if you want to insult somebody, you call them an ass. Yes? You never praise somebody by saying, your eyes are beautiful like an ass. Or you have such intelligence like an ass. Or you dance graceful as an ass. They are only cited to insult. We always talk about asses being stupid and ugly and everything like that. And in India, they're probably the most abused animal. You just work like an ass. And even in our own philosophy, you know, ass, you know, the ass is, there's grass everywhere. There's grass everywhere, growing everywhere. But an ass will work so hard, practically to the level of almost collapse every day, just so you can give him some grass. Because you give him some grass, even though there's grass everywhere else. So that's kind of like an example of people who are stupid. Yes? But Krishna's in the heart of the asses too. So we wanted to just make a statement. By protecting the cows, we learn to be compassionate to others. We see Krishna, we feel for them. So you know what we named our asses? Kamala and Amboja, which are names of lotus flowers. So these asses are named after lotus flowers. And something happened when I went there, because they actually respect them and take care of them. They do some seva too.
But one of these asses, Kamala, she came up to lick me. Which I never, asses, usually they kick you, they don't lick you. From kick to lick. But the concept is there.
Because when Lord Chaitanya saw in the Jarikanda forest the deers and the tigers dancing together in kirtan and embracing one another with love, he recited a verse from Srimad Bhagavatam, which describes in Vrindavan, because Krishna is there in the center of everyone's life, there can be no enmity. There can be no inimicalness. Even the naturally inimical species and animals, they love each other because Krishna has become the center.
And this is how, by really, actually, genuinely putting Krishna in the center, what does that mean?
It means we have to take ourselves out of the center. It's not about me, it's about Krishna. When we take ourselves out of the center and put Krishna in the center, then we actually connect to the grace, to the happiness that we're truly looking for. Like watering the root of the tree, that water goes to every part of the tree.
So Srila Prabhupada wanted to establish these principles. Mother Earth, she's an expansion of Radharani, she's Bhumi Devi, to offer honor and respect to her children, to the gifts. Everything we have is a gift of God. The air we breathe is God's gift. How could we pollute it? The water we drink, the rivers, the oceans, it's Krishna's gift. Why pollute it? The soil of Mother Earth, chemicals, pesticides, pollute it. Everything that the environmentalists and the ecologists are talking about 40 years ago, Srila Prabhupada taught us, is what we should be doing. But not just for the environment and the ecology. Samsudhir Hari Toshana. Because this is what pleases Krishna. Honoring, respecting nature as Krishna's energy. Honoring all living beings as Krishna's children. That is devotional service. So Srila Prabhupada, he wanted us, and he didn't want us to just be nice to cows, but to abuse each other. Vaishnav community, we learn to honor and respect and encourage and appreciate each other. A Vaishnav community is where our greatest happiness is to see others advancing. And if we see someone getting better than me, that should give us happiness. If it gives us distress, it means we're not Krishna conscious. This is difficult because the material world is based on envy. And Krishna consciousness is teaching us a contradictory state of consciousness. Where instead of being envious, we become joyful.
when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was giving tremendous blessings to Sanatan Goswami in front of all the devotees were happy. And Srila Prabhupada writes there, because they saw that Sanatan Goswami was getting so many blessings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they were joyful. They were not envious. They were not thinking, why not me? Why is he giving so much attention to him?
By appreciating someone else getting the blessings, being empowered, making progress, by appreciating another's good fortune is what makes us dear to Krishna. It's a reality. If you appreciate another person's good fortune, you may get more blessings than the person who you're appreciating. Because it's that consciousness that pleases Krishna. His Holiness Srila Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, he felt so deeply about Srila Prabhupada's vision for Gita Nagari and for these farm communities and for our society at large. We used to talk about how Srila Prabhupada, when he was in his last stages of life, where he was practically physically immobile, he came to London. And from London, he wanted to come to Gita Nagari specifically. His main purpose of coming to America, as far as I understand, was to come to Gita Nagari to encourage the devotees in the importance of these communities. Agriculture, farm protection, and devotional community of Vaishnav. Character, behavior. But because his health took a turn to the worst, he returned to India and Vrindavan. But just the fact that he had that desire is such a powerful statement. And Bhakti Tirtha Swami Maharaj, he had such deep, profound faith and surrender to Srila Prabhupada's will that when he was dying of cancer, he could have gone to Vrindavan. He said, I will stay in Gita Nagari because I want to set a principle that wherever Prabhupada was is a holy place. And the places that Prabhupada felt were so important to him, this is our Vrindavan. And I'll end today's talk with a beautiful example of how Vaishnava relationships are beyond the realm of birth and death. May I tell a story?
No.
I will tell. His Holiness Tamal Krishna Goswami, at one time he was here at Gita Nagari. And he helped to build it and establish it. Then, soon after that, His Holiness Satsarup Goswami Maharaj. Most of the Srila Prabhupada Lilamrita was written by him here at Gita Nagari. And little later, His Holiness Bhakti Tirtha Swami Maharaj came. And when he was in his state of, there was no hope for his physical body to survive, he just gave his heart, his life to Prabhupada with such graciousness and kindness to the devotees. I remember, I love to tell this story, When I first came here to see him, just about 7.5 weeks before he left this world, there was a whole group of people who came to see him. And many of them were really bitter people. And he spoke in such a way that there was about 30 people in the room. Everyone was weeping and crying. Their lives were literally transformed. And I came back in the room and I said, Maharaj, how did you do that? I've never in my life seen anyone transform people like you just did today. Instantly. And he smiled. He said, you see, I was praying that I would be able to do this. And because I'm dying, I'm specially empowered to do it. So he said, I'm really happy I'm dying because I could do better service this way. That was wonderful. One day he told me, and Braja Leela knows this story, and Ekavir Prabhu, because they know it even better than me. But one day he told me that he had a dream. In the dream, His Holiness Tamal Krishna Goswami appeared to him. And he was crying. Now, Tamal Krishna Goswami, years before, had already left the world. He was crying. And Srila Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj was looking at him. He said, why are you crying? And Tamal Krishna Goswami said, because when Srila Prabhupada called for me and took me from this mortal world, all of my followers and friends, they suffered so much in separation from me. He said, now Prabhupada is calling for you. So you have to come. And now all your friends and followers are going to suffer the same way. And I'm crying because I feel for them so bad, so much. I'm feeling for all the suffering of your disciples and followers and well-wishers. He said, but you have to come because Prabhupada's calling for you. And he said, but before you leave, I'm going to come back and see you. Yes? Am I telling it correct so far? So Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj was crying when he was telling me this story. Tamal Krishna Goswami came. He was feeling such empathy and compassion for all of my followers. But he told me he would return before I would leave. And he said he still hasn't returned. I think that's why I'm not leaving. I have to wait for him to return. Weeks and weeks went by. And every now and then he would say to me, I wonder when Tamal Krishna Goswami is going to come back. And one day, Tamal Krishna Goswami, one of his disciples came with his deities. Tamal Krishna Goswami's deities. This pujari, I think she was in Dallas or somewhere, and she had this vision that Tamal Krishna Goswami told her to bring the deities to give Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj darshan. We were all there. And there was this entourage of people that came. And they set up an altar. They were doing kirtan. And we brought Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj on his wheelchair out to see the darshan of the deities. And he started to cry. Because on the altar, there was Tamal Krishna Goswami's deities, and there was a photo of Tamal Krishna Goswami. And he turned to me and said, see, he came. Just like he told me, now I could go. So the love between Vaishnavas It's on the spiritual platform. And we should know this. When we really make relationships on the basis of centered in Krishna, those relationships are eternal. It's beyond birth, beyond death. It's on the level of the soul.
Thank you very much.